Welcome to the Greater Cincinnati Business Report. Stephen J. Lowenstein with you for the next hour as we look through the pages of this week's Cincinnati Business Courier. We'll kick off our program today talking about beer and some very interesting plans for the employees of the Rheingeist Brewery. We'll then talk about the Uptown Consortium as Job Ohio wants developers' plans for a new innovation center. We'll have another article about real estate as Wallach building a $9 million cornerstone crossing in Ellesmere. Now, I found this article to be quite interesting. Most of us pay a transfer tax when we sell or buy a piece of property, but there are some who don't. You'll have to stay tuned to find out just who it is and how they're going about doing it. In this article regarding the transfer tax and our auditor for Hamilton County. Procter & Gamble is in the news again with two articles this week. The first one, a company invents a way to lighten skin. And the second one, P&G recruits managers who paused their careers. Kroger, back in the news again. They'll be standardizing their date labels. We'll talk about that. I didn't realize there was so much difference from product to product, but there is. We'll talk a little bit about the standardization they're going to be utilizing. Next, we'll have some banking news. We'll talk about which banks gave the most SBA loans. Rounding out our program today are these two articles. CNBC names top financial advisors in the greater Cincinnati area. And foodies listen up. Postmark reopens with event focus. To kick off the second half of the program, we'll have two My View columns. First one, the people of the future city are united and enlightened. And then how employers can deal with talent shortages in 2020. Well, let's begin with the cover story from this week's Cincinnati Business Courier, the print edition, that is. Back in 2015, when Rheingeist Innovation Brewer Peter Mooney was just a regular production brewer, he found himself in a car with his boss, brewery co-founder Bob Bonder, on their way to catch a plane to that year's giant Great American Beer Festival in Denver. It was a time of consolidation for the craft brewing industry. Some of the biggest players like Elysian Brewing, Full Sail Brewing, Oscar Blues, Abita Brewing, and Lagunitas were being bought up by private equity firms and macro brewers like Budweiser's parent AB InBev and Miller Coors. The nascent Rheingeist was only 2 years old at the time, but already one of Cincinnati's largest craft breweries, and it was being dogged by acquisition rumors. Moody recalls asking Bonder about the industry. "I asked Bob, 'Do you think you'll ever do that?' And he said, 'No. We'll be employee-owned,' Mooney said. It wasn't something the brewery advertised widely at the time, but it was a promise Bonder kept. The Over-the-Rhine-based brewery Today, Cincinnati's largest locally owned craft brewery, By Beer Brewed, and the second largest in the state of Ohio, behind Great Lakes Brewing Company, told its employees in June that it's handing over the keys through an employee stock ownership plan, or ESOP, that will kick off in the mid of 2020. The move will cement Rheingeist's presence as a major local craft brewery in an industry that grew up in the shadow of corporate-owned giants. An ESOP isn't something a company does when it's trying to provide the largest return to investors. That's according to Taft's Titinius & Hollister partner, Michael Liang, an employee benefits expert who's well-versed in ESOPs. Liang said it's fairly expensive prospect because everybody is lawyered up to protect the interest of the three parties involved: the investors and original owners of a company, the legal entity of the company itself, and the buyers, or the employees in this case. ESOPs typically work like this. A trustee borrows money to buy out the original owners and investors, then holds on to all of the shares of the company. As the employees pay back that borrowed money, shares are gradually released to them. Liang said it's usually more profitable to sell the company to a rival or to a private equity. But it could just be that the owners love their employees, he said. Now everybody's hand is on the oar, all rowing together, and hopefully rowing fast. That's been the plan from the beginning. Bonders and Rheingeist has never been about making the most money possible. If we would have just sold to Anheuser-Busch, we'd make out, he said. But we'd be screwing over the 300 people who work here who have built this. It's been like that since the early days, and it just wouldn't be right if they didn't get to share the rewards of that. That's not to say the founders won't still be involved. Bonder and co-founder Brian Goulding will have a hand in the company. Their shares will be retired over the next 10 to 20 years. But the day-to-day decisions are already being made by a leadership team of the heads of 9 departments who meet every Thursday. Bonder and Goulding focus more on overall direction and the ESOP. The early days. In 2013, Rheingeist became Cincinnati's 13th craft brewery, but its origins date to 2011, 4 years after Bonder moved to the Queen City to open coffee roaster Tazamia. He was living it over the Rhine above the neighborhood bar, the Lachman. These were the early days of OTR Brewery Heritage Tours. The tour guide, John Fuchon, now working as a tour guide for Rheingeist, would end his tours at Lachman, where Bonder could hear him from his third-floor apartment. He was shouting about the history of the 40 breweries that used to exist here. You get back to the bar at the end, and they had 12 beers on tap, but none of them were local. It seemed like a huge disconnect, Bonder said. Craft beer was by no means new at the time. There were 8 such breweries at Cincinnati at the end of 2011, but it was not the booming business it is today. There are now more than 60 breweries in Greater Cincinnati. Bonder called up his friend and former colleague Goulding. The two had worked as consultants in San Francisco, where on weekends they'd host blind beer taste testings with friends. Goulding went on to join the beer industry, working as a sales manager for breweries like Anderson Valley and Dogfish Head in California. Goulding fell in love with the energy of Over the Rhine. He moved to Cincinnati, delivered coffee for Tazabia by day, and slept on Bonder's couch at night. They raised $1.2 million from local investors, transformed a historic brewery building in the northwest corner of the neighborhood to what would become a local giant. To see the potential for what could happen to this neighborhood, and then to see it all coming to life, that's when we really started to realize that this could really be a big thing, Goulding said. Indeed, Rheingeist towers over its nearest local competition. It's nearly four times as large, with 100,000-plus barrels sold last year, than Mad Tree Brewing, which sold 26,282, according to Courier Research. Covington's Braxton Brewery is number three at 13,900 barrels. Now, Rheingeist made some smart moves in the very beginning that allowed it to get as big as it did. The first was its tap room, an industrial space before industrial was cool. It was built in a former Elm Street Brewery bottling plant. It's a veritable cathedral of beer, but it patrons in the middle of the brewing process with tall silver fermenting tanks just out into the concrete beer hall, spilling the smell of mashed grains into a wide-open space lit by skylights in the vaulted ceiling. A destination location. The brand personality is on full display, with a mural of Paul Newman adorning the far wall next to a mounted stag's head. The cavernous bay room houses games such as cornhole, ping pong, and wiffle ball on some nights. The brewery has since purchased the entire building, and an event space and rooftop bar, leasing ground floor space to upscale restaurant Sart. Rheingeist has created a destination in a once desolate corner of Over the Rhine, gives people a reason to stick around and do more than just drink beer. The second was in brewing its flagship India Pale Ale, Truth. At the time, West Coast IPAs characterized as more hop-forward and bitter with notes of tropical fruit were not as ubiquitous as they are today. East Coast IPAs marked by a malty sweetness were more popular. But coming from San Francisco, Bonder and Goulding wanted to bring that dry, hoppy style of IPA to Cincinnati. It was a gamble. While today they are the most popular beer category, those bitter hop bomb IPAs were almost non-existent in Cincinnati's brewing scene. To be sure, the founders hedged that bet. Truth was one of 60 or so beers the brewery launched with, but it became a runaway success, now accounting for nearly half of the brewery's production. The third move was the decision to self-distribute. That was a new option at the time, thanks to a law pushed by the Ohio Craft Brewers Association that allowed breweries producing less than 1 million barrels to open a tap room on site to sell their suds, but also to ship their own kegs and cans to bars, grocery stores, and other retailers, cutting out the middleman of large beer distributors. That allowed Rheingeist to be more strategic and selective about its expansion, selecting individual cities and markets to enter first: Dayton, then Columbus, then Akron, then Cleveland, rather than expanding statewide and spreading itself thin. Goulding himself would talk to bar owners and beer sellers and develop a relationship. It's something he learned at Anderson Valley and Dogfish Head. No distributor can tell you a story and sell you beer as well as you can, he said. You're willing to go the extra mile much more than some wholesaler with a lot of other brands. Those factors have allowed Rheingeist to grow into a dominant presence on bar taps and store shelves. At most Kroger stores throughout Ohio, or Kentucky, or in Pittsburgh, or Nashville, their cans with the deep blue field and iconic teardrop-shaped skull logo emblazoned with the motto, Cincy Made, has prominent placement. The National Brewers Association classified Rheingeist as a regional brewery due to its size. That segment of the industry grew 4% last year, while Rheingeist climbed to number 16. Now, Rheingeist is something of an anomaly right now. It's a competitive market. We aren't seeing the growth in distribution that we saw last year, Brewers Association chief economist Bart Watson said. Them going the ESOP route, it shows they're living the values they're preaching. A lot of craft breweries preach their local ties. This shows that the owners are going to be in the community for the long run. For Bonder and Goulding, it always came back to the employees. Sure, Rheingeist has always offered perks like competitive salary, employer-provided health care, 401k, donuts on Friday, fruit in the break room, and a free case of beer with every twice-monthly paycheck. But Dennis Kramer Wine, director of culture, remembers the founders stepping up for their employees from the very beginning. Kramer Wine started at the company's first driver in 2013, and 6 months into the brewery's tenure, one of his team members died suddenly. A father himself, he was deeply affected. He went to Bonder and Goulding, telling them he wanted the employee to take as much time off as he needed, but without having to worry about missing a paycheck. Bonder quickly agreed to let the man have as much paid time off as needed, but did him one better. He offered to pay 100% of the funeral cost. My jaw dropped, Kramer Wine said. I joined Rheingeist from this employee-owned company in Colorado, where it was just a hug fest every day. And here I am knowing I've got to come in and fight for what's right for this guy. They're ahead of me. Kramer Wine is now in charge of passing the company's culture to all Rheingeist's 300 employees. The brewery tries to promote from within as much as possible. Every employee is expected to work beer festivals, to interact with customers, to see how excited people get for their product. Employees are encouraged to shadow brewers so they know how the product is made. And for all new hires, going forward, there's a buddy program that pairs them up with an experienced worker in their department to learn from. Mooney's own path at Rheingeist is emblematic of how a brewery works. He joined from fellow Cincinnati craft brewery Rivertown in 2014 to work on Rheingeist's canning line. When one of Rheingeist's brewers took 2 weeks off for his honeymoon and the brewery needed a fill-in, his hand shot up. Mooney took a crash course in brewing. Before too long, he became a brew shift leader. Then he learned cellaring, cleaning tanks, transferring beer between systems, and dry hopping, or adding hops after the boil to give it the characteristic bitter, piney taste, went on to take charge of the entire Spring Grove Innovation Brewery shop. When Rheingeist leaders want to tweak a recipe or experiment with something like a low-calorie beer as an alternative to the new hard seltzer craze, he's who they call. Moody's been responsible for brewers like Lil Bubs, Lynx, Homer, Peach Dodo, T-Rex, and Quid, an English-style summer ale that won silver at this year's Great American Beer Festival. Mooney said he's proud to work at the brewery that chose to hand over ownership to its employees rather than to sell it to the highest bidder. It's one of the reasons the company has been successful, he said. When you see the owners caring and working hard as well, not just sitting in their office with their feet up on the desk counting money and cracking the whip. I worked hard for companies like that, and it doesn't make you want to work any harder. Now, accompanying the article is this sidebar. It's a timeline in vertical form, entitled Rheingeist Timeline, and it begins in 2013. June of that year, when Rheingeist opens its doors at OTR. Then in 2014, in January, cans its beer for the first time. In May 2014, it receives tax credits to purchase its building and expand its capacity. Then in December of 2014, it sells beer in Northern Kentucky for the first time. In 2015, in March, it triples its brewing capacity with a new brew house, starts construction on a rooftop deck and event space, then in May opens a nano brewery in Columbus. October of 2015 saw the company launch Cidergeist, a line of hard ciders, and in 2016 expand its distribution of Cidergeist to Boston in February. Then in September of 2016, it expands its beer distribution to the state of Massachusetts. In 2017, it expanded to Pittsburgh, and in July of that year, expands distribution to Indianapolis. Then in September of 2017, it purchased land for its 155,000-square-foot distribution facility, and an upscale restaurant, Sartre, opens its ground floor of the brewing building. Then in 2019, it expands distribution to Nashville, and that's where the timeline ends. Moving over to this week's Crane Watch, under the subcategory of commercial real estate is this article, $9 billion residential community coming to NKY, or as it's more commonly known, Northern Kentucky. An Ohio developer plans to start construction this month on a more than $9 million apartment community for seniors in Ellesmere. Wallach County Development plans to build Cornerstone Crossing. It's going to be a 50-apartment building for seniors aged 55 and older. The new apartment community will be located at 221 Cross Street. Cornerstone Crossing is expected to be a total investment of $9.3 million. We know there's not enough affordable housing in nearly every city in the United States, Wallach CEO Tom Fusa said. This new community will offer safe, decent, and affordable housing to seniors in Ellesmere. Cornerstone Crossing will be a single, three-story building. It'll have 25 one-bedroom apartments, 25 two-bedroom apartments. Each unit will have a dishwasher, washer-dryer hookups, and controlled access. There will be 5 handicapped accessible units. The building will have an elevator, business center, fitness center, and community room with a demonstration kitchen for residents. St. Henry Catholic Church sold the property to Wallach for $380,000. That's according to property records. Reverend Greg Bach, pastor of St. Henry Church, said the sale of the property creates a splendid opportunity for any of our parishioners who may be looking to downsize. Marty Lenoff, mayor of Ellesmere, said the city has been working with Wallach and St. Henry for a number of years to make this project happen. Wallach Communities, based in New Albany, Ohio, was awarded federal low-income housing tax credits to finance a portion of the project with finance partners City Real Estate Advisors and Fifth Third Bank. In addition, Fifth Third Bank also financed the construction loan for Cornerstone Crossing. The primary mortgage loan is through Hope of Kentucky, a consortium of Kentucky banks that pools funds to finance housing projects around the state. Wallach specializes in affordable multifamily and senior living communities in the Midwest. With more than 800 employees, Wallach has developed and built more than 400 family, senior, and affordable apartment communities, currently manages apartments at 190 locations across the Midwest. Construction on Cornerstone Crossing is scheduled to begin in October and be completed at about 14 months, depending on the weather. Thanks for sticking with us, or if you're just joining, you're listening to Radio Reading Services of Greater Cincinnati, a division of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. I'm Stephen J. Lowenstein, and I'll continue with this week's edition of the Greater Cincinnati Business Report. We'll start off with a My View column, the first of two we'll have this week, entitled The People of the Future City Are United and Enlightened. Cincinnati shined with celebration for all the world to see. Spanning more than 30 city blocks and crossing the historic Roebling Suspension Bridge, for 4 days and nights, Blink turned our region into an outdoor immersive art museum for all to enjoy. Blink flooded our region with an abundance of art and light, by extension a vision of shared future that transcends everything we know today. Today we celebrate the beauty of our city and its neighborhoods. Importantly, we celebrate shared humanity, and we extend our gratitude to the people of the shining future city that is Cincinnati. Your light is awe-inspiring. Your radiance is undeniable. Cincinnati has made significant strides, however, in order to continue creating pathways to opportunity. We must keep our eyes, minds, and hearts open. We must identify and acknowledge our region's ongoing struggles, and we must work together to find solutions, provide access to needed resources, and to nourish one another's growth. Blink has come close. The artists, creators, and makers have gone. It's up to each of us in our future city to continue to draw light from one another. In our future city, we make the rules together. We hold ourselves responsible. We hold each other accountable to stave the darkness of ignorance and poverty. not here, we say. In our future, we are actively building a culture of equality and inclusion. We recognize we are stronger together, therefore no one person, neighborhood, or business takes a back seat. We encourage the transfer of information. We herald contribution. We empower self-expression in all of its many forms. And so, as the Queen City holds court on the national stage, we have within our grasp the enviable moment to lead by example, that illuminate the path forward, inclusion and wonderment that was made possible by a greater equalizer, art. We are committed to continuing to drive the city we love forward by creating opportunity, probing possibility, and we can call on you and yours to join us. It began that My View column, the people of the future city are united and enlightened, was contributed by Josh Huser and Andrew Salzbrun. They are partners with Agar. Partners is the name of their organization. And they are an experimental marketing agency, also one of the producers of Blink. Now, our second My View column was written by Tom Gilman. He's the managing partner and CEO of Gilman Partners. And his topic is, talent shortage will continue into 2020. Employers, here's how you can prepare. Despite current concerns of an economic downturn, the Labor Department's September job report contained some positive surprises, including a national unemployment rate of 3.5%, the lowest since 1969. Though the pace of hiring has slowed moderately since 2018, we continue to believe that talent shortage is here to stay, and employers should plan accordingly. Many of the underlying conditions we've seen in the last 4 years continue as employers work to manage the talent shortage and focus on retention, cultural fit, and efficiency. Even in a downturn, we expect employers to do what they can to retain their talent, knowing it will be difficult to hire again once the market gets back on track. Here are some of the biggest talent trends we anticipate as we move into 2020. Hyper-personalization. Today's job candidates are savvy enough to recognize and ignore a recruiting email written for a mass audience. They want to know how the opportunity will benefit them personally. We're also seeing this trend play out in employee benefits, as more employers are letting individuals customize their own benefits to fit their personal needs and lifestyles. HR can no longer afford to take a one-size-fits-all approach to attracting and retaining talent. Investment in the candidate experience. The high rate of voluntary employee turnover means many workers feel confident in their ability to find new opportunities. Top talent has options. Many will walk away from a new opportunity if they feel their time is being wasted. Long and repetitive job applications and overly insensitive interview processes are turnoffs for candidates. Simplify your candidate experience. Work to ensure that every interaction you have with candidates is clear and meaningful. Broader approach to hiring. The talent shortage means employers are having a harder time finding talent that matches a narrow skill set, especially when their list of must-have requirements is extensive. More are looking beyond experience and hiring for factors like attitude and motivation, which require more thoughtful interview techniques, but can lead to greater long-term success. Automation of hard-to-hire-for task. As technology becomes less expensive and more accessible, organizations are increasingly finding ways to automate processes for which they're having a hard time finding workers. As a result, productivity increases and existing employees can focus on tasks that are more strategic and rewarding. HR and marketing join forces. It's not uncommon for an organization's marketing and HR functions to work independently. But as more organizations fight harder to attract top talent, they're realizing the need for an employer brand that clearly articulates and promotes an employee's value proposition and recruiting marketing materials that tell a succinct and memorable story. Every organization has a why, and it's important to share it with prospective and current employees. Learning and reskilling move into the C-suite. The limited pool of skilled workers and ever-changing technology and job requirements mean employers must incorporate on-the-job learning and reskilling programs to keep their workforce relevant. In the coming years, we expect to see more organizations adding new senior-level roles dedicated to workforce learning and reskilling. We're in a period of some economic uncertainty, but what remains constant is the need for strong talent who can help organize, adapt to the changes, and continue to prosper. And again, that My View column, Talent Shortage, will continue into 2020. Employers, Here's How You Can Prepare, was contributed by Tom Gilman, Managing Partner and CEO of Gilman Partners. Now, next up today, we're going to talk about a topic that no one particularly likes, taxes, and some loopholes that a few individuals are taking advantage of that probably most of us, I know I didn't, know about. The article is entitled, Auditor Says Big Real Estate Players, such as Casino, FC Cincinnati, should pay property tax transfer. Hamilton County has lost a significant amount of revenue over the past several years because of a tax avoidance strategy favored by large property owners selling a limited liability company that owns a piece of a property instead of the property itself. That's according to Auditor Dusty Rhodes. By doing so, property owners and buyers avoid paying the county's property transfer tax, which is $4 per every $1,000 of valuation. Ohio lawmakers need to act to stop the LLC loophole, Rhodes said. The big boys are doing it, Rhodes, a Democrat, said. The little guys are paying through the nose. Two recent instances that caught Rhodes' attention are the sale of a West End church to an FC Cincinnati subsidiary and the sale of Jack Cincinnati Casino downtown to Vicky Properties Incorporated and Hard Rock International. Rhodes estimated that the transaction cost the county $3 million. That assumes that the $745 million sale price of the casino was for just the 22-acre piece of land, along with the building and parking garage that sits upon it. While Vicky Properties did not respond to a request for comment for the story, part of the sale likely was for the real estate, while part was for the lucrative casino business itself. FC Cincinnati's subsidiary, West End Holdings LLC, acquired Revelation Baptist Church's parcel of land on John Street via an LLC sale on May 10th. The property was valued at $734,000. If it had been sold for that much, the property transfer tax would have been around $3,000. In a statement, FC Cincinnati said it pays every tax it is legally obligated to pay, and that it represents new tax revenues to state and local governments. FC Cincinnati is very excited about the economic benefit the region will receive for the construction of a major league stadium and as the home of a professional soccer team, the team said. The loophole also impairs the auditor's ability to properly value property. Not only does the strategy avoid the transfer tax, it also hides the transaction cost, which impairs our ability to verily value the property for future taxes, Rhodes said. There is something very wrong with a system where an individual selling a $150,000 property pays $600 in transfer tax, while sellers of big properties pay nothing. Rhodes said the two state representatives, including Brown County Republican Doug Green, have drafted a bill to close the LLC loophole, but it has not yet been introduced in the Ohio General Assembly. Green could not immediately be reached for comment. Other states have closed the loophole, including Pennsylvania and New York. The loophole could be used by homeowners if they move their home ownership to an LLC they control. Rhodes is trying to come up with a better estimate of how much the county has lost from property owners avoiding the transfer tax. We're trying to get a handle on the big ones that have transferred over the past couple of years, he said. In manufacturing news this week, P&G invents a way to lighten skin. Procter & Gamble Company has been issued a patent for a method of formulating a skin-lightening composition, which could be used in cosmetics designed for people who have skin damaged by sunlight, disease, hormones, or aging. The Cincinnati-based maker of consumer goods such as Olay Skin Care stated in the patent filing that the invention focused on genes associated with skin tone. There's widespread demand for cosmetic products that can lighten skin, enhance skin tone, or modify skin pigment, P&G stated. Skin pigment irregularities are common across ethnic and racial groups, are often considered cosmetically disfiguring, P&G stated. Disorders of pigment production and distribution occur as a function of intensity and duration of UV radiation exposure, lifestyle habits, chronological age, endocrine functioning, and disease state, and are found ubiquitously in older populations. The color of normal skin is due primarily to varying amounts and distribution of melanin, hemoglobin, and carotenoids, P&G stated. Of these pigments, melanin is of primary significance to cosmetic skin treatment protocols. Melanin production is stimulated by exposure to ultraviolet light from the sun. A common condition associated with aging skin is the development of dark spots, which are sometimes called age spots or liver spots, P&G noted. In addition, a variety of skin hyperpigmentation disorders exist, including a condition that can affect pregnant women or those going through menopause. Melanosis or melasma is characterized by the development of blotchy brown spots over the cheeks, forehead, and sometimes on the upper lip and neck, a condition that frequently occurs during pregnancy and at menopause, P&G stated. The condition is frequently found among women taking oral contraceptives, and sometimes even among men. A pattern of similar facial hyperpigmentation is associated with a chronic liver disease called chalasma. And vitiligo is a form of hypopigmentation in which patches of skin are lighter than the overall skin tone. Credited as the inventors were Tobuhiro Hakazaki of Cincinnati, a veteran P&G research fellow, was a platform leader for skin tone, spot, and whitening technology development. Wenzhu Zhao of Mason, Robert Lloyd Biner of Montgomery, and Jin Zhu of Mason. Now, there are basically two kinds of grocery shoppers. Those who go in, buy what they need, go to the line, check out, and leave. Or if you're like me, when you buy something in a grocery store, you compare the labels from one brand to another, the size, the weight, and other information to see everything there is to know about that product before you put it in the basket. Well, for those of you who fall into that latter category like myself, here's something that's going to make it a bit easier soon when you go to Kroger's, as they are standardizing date labels to cut waste. Kroger Company will standardize and simplify the date labels on its store brand products in a move aimed at reducing food waste. Downtown Cincinnati-based Kroger, the nation's largest operator of traditional supermarkets, said it will simplify the date labeling it uses on its store brands, which it calls Our Brands. Now, the change means that Kroger will use one of two date labels on its own branded products. Use by indicates a food safety date. The date listed is the deadline after which that food is no longer safe to consume. The second label is best if used by, which indicates food quality. The product can be safely consumed after the date listed, but Kroger can only guarantee freshness up to the date listed. That's a change from the way Kroger lists products' expiration dates now. It currently uses various labels such as sell by, expires on, or best by. Gary Armbruster, project manager for Kroger's Zero Hunger, Zero Waste initiative, told me. The new method should simplify and better explain the meaning of those dates for customers. These phrases do not always accurately tell the customer how to handle food nearing, at, or past the date printed Armbruster said. Now, this causes confusion that could lead customers to throw away perfectly safe and delicious product in their home. The change is intended to help customers better understand what food is still good to eat in their homes, Armbruster said. Kroger expects to complete the shift in date labeling for its R brand products sometime next year. It has more than 10,000 items under various Kroger brand labels, including Simple Truth, Private Selection, Kroger, Hemis Fares, Murray's Cheese, Home Chef, and Everyday Living brands. Kroger's has 2,759 supermarkets in 35 states across the country. Kroger recognizes food waste often takes place in our customers' kitchens simply because product date labels can be confusing, resulting in safe-to-eat food regularly being tossed out, Howard Pupula said. As Kroger works to reduce food waste throughout our business and our communities, we are standardizing and simplifying our brand's products, date labels, providing clear guidance to our customers. Kroger is joining other supermarket operators that are moving to standardize product labels. Its changes reflect the best practices for date labeling that food waste reduction experts have developed. Nonprofit organization RedFed, Rethink Food Waste Through Economics and Data, said it has found that 20% of avoidable food waste is estimated to be discarded every year because of consumer date labeling confusion. Standardized date labeling is one of the most cost-effective solutions to reduce food waste and provide more resources to food banks across the country, RedFed Executive Director Chris Cochran said in a news release. We applaud Kroger's continued leadership on food waste reduction through its Zero Hunger, Zero Waste plan. Kroger launched its Zero Hunger, Zero Waste program in late 2017. It calls for Kroger to eliminate hunger in the communities it serves and to eliminate waste across the company by 2025. Finally today, three Cincinnati firms make CNBC's list of top financial advisors. Sims Township-based fixed income manager Cincinnati Asset Management ranked 35th on the list, while Sycamore Township-based Foster & Motley placed 51st, and downtown-based Ball & Gaynor came in at number 90. Now, CNBC calculates its list a bit differently than many organizations that do similar rankings. It aims to honor firms that are offering a comprehensive planning and financial services that help clients navigate through their complex financial life. It bases the rankings on data compiled by AccuPoint Solutions. And those factors include years of business, average account size, total accounts under management, number of investment advisors, the ratio of investment advisors to total number of employees, disclosures, discretionary assets under management, and total assets under management. Cincinnati Asset manages $2.6 billion in assets. It's been in business 28 years. It's the 16th largest money management firm in Greater Cincinnati. That's according to the Courier Research. Foster & Motley has been in business for 21 years, manages $1.3 billion in assets. It's the 20th largest money management firm. And CNBC pointed out, of Foster & Motley's professionals have earned high-level designations such as CFP, CFA, and CPA. Ball & Gaynor manages $12.8 billion. It's Greater Cincinnati's eighth largest money management firm. Although CNBC listed it with 21 years in business, it actually was founded in 1990. That gives it 29 years in operation. CNBC noted Ball & Gaynor gives each client the benefit of personal attention from a dedicated portfolio manager, but also has the advantage of the collective expertise of the entire team. Well, I've given you all of my collective expertise for this week. You've been listening to the Greater Cincinnati Business Report here on Radio Reading Services of Greater Cincinnati, an emission of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. I'm Stephen J. Lowenstein. Thanks for listening. Join me next week at this very same time for another fun and exciting fact-filled edition of the Greater Cincinnati Business Report.